It is time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings at this time, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger. Marshall's the editor and the publisher of the Timber Jay, a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Morning, Marshall. Thanks for being with us.
Well, happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, get us up to date on a story you've been covering for 25 years or so, having to do with MNTAC and water quality. What's new there?
Yeah, well, we had a Minnesota Supreme Court decision issued on Wednesday this week. Based on that decision, U.S. Steel may eventually have to clean up groundwater that's been contaminated by the MNTAC tailings base. And the High Court sided with the state's Pollution Control Agency, which had imposed limits on MNTAC sulfate contamination of groundwater in and around the tailings basin. They had set a limit of 250 milligrams per liter, which is a federal drinking water standard. And this was included by the MPCA in a permit. This was a new permit, which the MPCA had tried to issue to MNTAC in 2018. As a result of that, U.S. Steel sued, and the state's Court of Appeals actually had reversed the MPCA, arguing that the state rules did not clearly classify groundwater as subject to pollution control. That was a big win for U.S. Steel at the time, but this week's decision wipes that victory away. The court came down where it did by finding that the state's regulations on groundwater are ambiguous. And when regulations or statutes are ambiguous, courts are supposed to give agency interpretations considerable deference, and that's what the Supreme Court did here. They also noted that the MPCA has maintained its position that groundwater is subject to pollution control for more than three decades, which was another factor that the court weighed in its decision. Now, this is not going to be the final word. The High Court sent most of the case back to the Court of Appeals, which is now supposed to decide whether U.S. Steel has a right to what's known as a contested case hearing, which would go before an administrative law judge, and they would be able to potentially argue some more about whether or not they should be covered by these federal drinking water standards or whether they could apply for a variance. And they could argue about other things as well. So all of that is likely to delay any final resolution on this for probably years. And that's been kind of the pattern here. MNTAC, or U.S. Steel, for really decades, has used a variety of strategies to try to kind of forestall having to do any potentially expensive cleanup of the contamination issues at MNTAC. You know, and a lot of times it's been litigation, it's been, you know, various other delay tactics, and then other times it's just kind of raw political muscle, which they've used to get regulators in St. Paul to back off. So it's been kind of a successful strategy for years. At this point, where they were dealt a blow here in the court, there's still a lot more to go here and plenty of other twists and turns. And my guess is 5 years from now, we'll find that probably nothing's changed. So that's kind of been the story for a long time with the situation.
Plenty of work for lawyers, though, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Let's move on to another story. Give us an update on a shooting of a 19-year-old Mountain Iron man that happened a few months ago, what the St. Louis County attorney had to say.
Right. Yeah, Mark Rubin this week issued a determination that the shooting was reasonable, necessary, justified, and authorized. And that was a quote in his press statement. And he made that call after reviewing an independent analysis of evidence that had been developed by the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And then they had a separate outside investigator who had reviewed the BCA's information and came to conclusions that the shooting was justified. And the St. Louis County Attorney Mark Rubin also reviewed those findings with outside county attorney down from Washington County. And clearly he wanted to try to certainly have it seem that the review was objective, and I think certainly made that case. And unfortunately, I mean, this is one that's going to continue, I think, to kind of raise questions in the area. A lot of folks were upset about the shooting, which involved a 19-year-old named Esteban Elioff. He had been reported to have shoplifted a can of spray paint from a local Walmart. And when law enforcement responded to the scene, Elioff fled the area on foot into nearby woods. And police, after about an hour of searching, did find him. And when they confronted him, he apparently reached into his pocket and pulled something out, which one of the officers said he believed was a gun. It turned out to be a small pocket knife, and it's not clear what his objective was, what he was going to do with this pocket knife. I mean, he had two armed sheriff's deputies confronting you, and he was up in a tree, actually, a down tree. He was up standing on this tree several feet off the ground. But when they believed he had pulled a gun, the officers fired multiple times, and he died at that location. So still a lot of questions, I think, about this. And Ilyov clearly had problems. I mean, his family was aware he was using meth, and you know, obviously they were concerned about that. I mean, he did have meth in his system at the time of the shooting. But the family has hired an attorney, Robert Bennett. He actually represented the family of Philando Castile down in the Twin Cities. And according to Mr. Bennett, he's going to be going through the BCA investigation in detail. He said he's still has many questions about this decision and whether it was a rightful shooting.
Let's move into another criminal story you covered this week in the paper. Owners of an Ely business, Drop-In Shop is the name of the business, have felony charges now. What was happening there?
Well, one of the owners of the thrift shop, which is right on Sheridan Street, Ely's main drag, is facing felony charges for selling methamphetamine from the business. This has been something that's been rumored in town for a while, that, you know, you could buy more than just clothes and household items at the Drop-In Shop. You know, we'd heard about it probably a year ago, but of course, you know, we're not going to report based on rumors. But eventually, you know, those rumors did make it to the police, and Ely Police Department did forward some of its concerns to San Luis County and to the Lake Superior Drug Task Force, and they eventually mounted an investigation which began last October. They maintained regular surveillance of the business, and based on that, they were suspicious that there was something going on there. So they did set up a controlled buy using a confidential informant, and they were able to confirm that, in fact, meth was being sold out of the facility, or at least allegedly. And based on that, these charges were filed actually in December. They didn't find out about it until just recently, and the Ely City Council now is going to be weighing whether or not to suspend or pull their license to operate the business in Ely. So, you know, not only could the one of the owners of the business face prosecution, but the business itself could be closed. We don't know for sure at this point how the council will act, but, you know, there are other owners of the business who indicate that they were unaware of what was happening. So that's certainly a possibility. You know, so I think it'll be a potentially a tough decision for the council whether or not they want to act in that manner by shutting the business down. I mean, clearly there were a lot of people who were doing legitimate business out of that place as well. So.
Well, we've been living in some pretty cold temperatures, extended cold temperatures. Have you been getting out, though?
I have been. You know, and I have to say, you know, it's interesting. I don't think we've set any records here. This is kind of relatively mundane cold, but it's been very persistent. And I know, I think a lot of folks are looking forward to, what is it, like next Monday, maybe we're supposed to get above zero, and that's going to feel awfully nice, I suspect. But, you know, I don't know. I always kind of like these cold temperatures. I get out in them all the time because it is interesting when it's really cold. And we've had some cold. I know I was out snowshoeing this morning in the bog and behind our house, the Lost Lake Swamp, it's called. And it was, I keep a thermometer down there, actually, right along one of our snowshoe trails, just because it's always quite a bit colder down in the swamp than it is up at our house, which is up on a ridge. And anyway, so it was 38 below there when I went by, which is, you know, pretty chilly. I'm hoping that at least once in this cold snap to reach a 40 below. So we've got a few days yet. I think over the weekend it's supposed to be quite chilly. So maybe we'll hit 40. That'd be good.
You know, it makes you feel better once you're outside. There's still things to see out there, little trails, and trying to figure out what animals maybe came there before you, and lots of things going on.
Absolutely. And it's often gorgeous out that, you know, when it's that cold. You know, everything's frosted up. And you know, I tell you, you just dress for it, and it's not a problem.
Right. We got this. It's Marshall Helmberger, and this has been the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. We'll check in with you next week. Thanks, Marshall.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.